This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour or so of old-time radio crime. You can find every Wednesday at relicradio.com. We'll start off this week with Broadway is My Beat and the Johnny Clark murder case. Their story from November 29th, 1952. Then it's another Johnny, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Peerless Fire matter, his case from May 5th, 1957.
Broadway is My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
The death of autumn past is not unobserved on Broadway. There's the tolling of bells by thin, shivering fellows in white wigs and baggy Santa Claus suits. And the hands of hawkers are not so nimble and fleet, numbed with winter darkness. And from trumpets, solemn removal of derby for the passing of autumn song, and modulate, quick scream into Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And remember, how were the days of the falling leaf? Taste their glow, watch them flicker, watch them die. Then go search somewhere else. Only 25 more shopping days. And north on Broadway and then east, where wealth is fringed by Winter River, the room is paneled wood gleaming in firelight, the carved desk and sheen of wine-red leather chair, the soft glow of firelight also on the face of a boy, dead of a bullet wound between the eyes, and the man over him, proud.
Neat shot, wouldn't you say?
Yes, yes it was, Mr. Parker.
I'd say he never knew what hit him, wouldn't you say?
Eddie, please, please.
We're listening, Cora. What is it you want to tell us?
Nothing, just nothing.
Frightful thing, I suppose, for a woman. You see, Mr. Clover, my wife has never looked upon death, not at least to my knowledge. Cora, dear, is this the very first time...
Just write it down for me, Mr. Barker, exactly what happened, how it happened.
Quite obvious, wouldn't you say?
Just tell me.
Quite obvious, I would say. The open safe, the money he tried to steal, now littering my library floor where I potted him.
Eddie, stop it.
Why should I, dear? A man asked me. He has to know exactly how it was. That sordid little thief could have killed me if I hadn't got there first.
Would you just move away from him, Mr. Parker?
Of course. How these things work out. We were off for a second little honeymoon. Cora and me. Reservations, the whole deal. Fun, sunshine, desert. Rossmore in Palm Springs. Then word at the airport that our plane was grounded. Back here and then...
There's nothing on him. Loose change, pack of cigarettes, no gun, no identification.
I was saying... We came back here and we sat for a while, talking, then to bed. Cora fell asleep. I read. There was a sound on the fire escape. I got my gun. I found him here in the library with the safe open. It was simple. Between the eyes. We'd best hit the sack, Cora. We're leaving tomorrow.
Cancel it. Stick around.
Look, we've
Eddie.
Got...
Eddie. Eddie boy.
You wish to add something, Cora?
You liked it. You liked killing him, didn't you, Eddie boy?
A thief, dear. In my house. Well, come now. Can you think of another way?
And the man named Edward Barker squared his shoulders, clasped hands behind back, made glinty the eyes, and stood at parade rest in a double-breasted pinstripe. A few minutes later, the men from technical made their entrance. Mr. Barker made more glinty the eyes. And I left. Home now and one flight up. The magazine story continued next month. Sleep. Life continued next day. Next day, breakfast that explodes when you pour the milk on it. Coffee. And back to headquarters. The man sitting in your office waiting for you is Detective Dennison.
Morning, Danny.
Hi, Dennison.
Nippy out, huh?
Yeah.
You notice how fast Christmas is coming this year? Every year it comes fast. Except the payments to the Christmas club. Those week after slow week.
Yeah. You got anything for me, Dennison?
Zero.
No identification on the boy, huh?
Nothing. Strange, too. The way he opened that safe. Clean. Real fine professional job. You'd think he had a record. Mugovan left a notation that the boy's prince check with nothing at all we've got. So Mugovan sent him to Washington. We'll see.
That's all.
What you doing for Christmas, Danny?
I hadn't thought of it.
Yeah, this sounds real oblong, but my girlfriend got a girlfriend. Warm, sunny, southern type. She used to dance
Thanks, Dennison. I'll think about it. Turn the chair. through steamed window, the winter city and treadwheel of crowd. And beyond, harbor and freighter. And you know it's barnacled with the coral of summer seas. And turn back into it. Begin a waiting you've known before. Wait on the identity of a boy who lies still and nameless in the morgue. And fill in the time of waiting across the street with coffee and a sandwich. Back then to headquarters. And corridor is swift winter twilight and the new sheaves of violence on bulletin board. And at the turn, it's Detective Dennis.
I told the girl to have a seat. Wait till you got back.
What girl?
The girl who ran out of husband last night, all night. Looked for him all day. Came here for a little.
Oh, where is she?
Girl with this problem, where else would she be? Morgue. Need me anymore, Danny?
No. Go back. Turn into another corridor. And at the end of it, the swaying light bulb, its yellow on the winter mist hair of a girl who sits erect on the worn bench. Miss?
I was told to wait here. The man said, I asked somebody about Johnny, I don't remember who, but he was tall and kind of...
Well, that was Detective Dennison. Johnny...
My husband, Johnny Clark. I'm Peggy Clark. Johnny said he was going out for a little walk last night, and he didn't come back.
Huh?
I sat up all night. Then this morning I went to where he works, and he wasn't there, and I asked somebody what to do. That's the morgue, isn't it? Through those doors?
Yes.
Will you take me in, please?
Well, Mrs. Clark...
If Johnny's in there, I want to know about it. May I touch my husband? I'm going to touch him. I wish to thank you. All of you have been very considerate.
No, wait. I could talk to you later, Mrs. Clark, at your home, wherever you...
Talk?
About Johnny. About why this happened to him.
He was a good husband. He worked very hard. They told him at the warehouse they had their eye on him.
He was killed while he was robbing a place on the East River.
We live in a two-room flat, and we were saving for a house in Queens or Pelham Bay. I have a girlfriend lives in Pelham. She has a kid. I guess I nagged Johnny about the house.
Your husband never do a thing like that before. Steal, rob.
Johnny and I went to movies or walked in a park, and I knew where he was every minute. Every minute. We lived quietly. We had a very good friend who said he'd help Johnny buy the house if only I'd stop nagging in his presence. Drove him crazy, he said.
What friend?
What?
Well, who was the friend who was going to help you buy that house?
That's Frank Grunner. A man Johnny met at a lunch near where he works. He said he'd help Johnny about the house. He knew an angle. I'll just have to tell him it's no use.
You know where I can find Frank Grunner?
Mm-hmm. We've been to his room for beer some night, Johnny and I. It's a boarding house, 1227 East 28th. I'm just going to tell him to forget about the house. I'm just thinking about it. May I go now?
My name's...
Come in. Let me take your coat.
Well,
Please.
All right.
Now, let me look at you. My, you've changed. Was it awful?
Huh?
Yes, it must have been. And now you've come back.
I'm from the police. My name's Danny Clover.
Oh, I thought you sent me the pillow. This one?
No, I didn't.
So many of the boys who stayed here with me send me things. Soldiers, most of them, and well, I thought you were the one that sent
me... No, I want some information about...
One of them sent me a sword. See? From Japan. A real Japanese used it to...
I'd information about Frank Grunner.
I only wish he was here now. I'd show him how a real Renfrew would use this. I'm Bessie Renfrew.
I'm glad.
I'm kidding. I like Frank. I wouldn't harm a hair.
Let's talk about him, shall we?
He's gone.
You mean for the day?
Gone.
Then he's not coming back, is that it?
Yesterday. Pinched my cheek. Gave me my favorite smile. Then got mean and said, Bessie, you run a flea bag boarding house and I hope we'll never meet again. What a kidder.
Where did Frank go?
You'll never believe me.
Yes, I will.
Oh.
I promise.
Ruxton Plaza Hotel on Park Avenue. From Bessie Renfrew's to Park Avenue like that. See, I told you you'd never believe me.
May I have my coat, Mrs. Renfrew?
You poor boy.
And having lived the place of brocaded pillows and samurai swords and the motherly Mrs. Renfrew, live it just a little longer. Disengage her toil-worn fingers from my overcoat sleeve and brush aside the gentle tides of gin-scented air and get out. Across town, out of Park Avenue in the Ruxton Plaza Hotel, the clerk recovers from the sight of a police badge, grasps the desk with both hands, and tells you that a Mr. Frank Grunner is a newly arrived guest, that he occupies room 1212, and please, will there be no trouble, please. Walk away from him. Ride the elevator with a young woman in conversation with a Pekingese, with her hand being held by a gray-haired gentleman who talks to no one at all. 12th floor and down the corridor lined with framed pastel splotches and carpeted silence. And room 1212. The radio behind it plays. No one answers the door. Try it. And inside, framed pastel, larger. Radio, jazz through white lacquer, bed occupied. The man on it was dressed in a blue satin robe. And where his initials were, F.G., between them, a knife. Laying against one hand a book, a novel. In the other hand, a corner of bedspread in anguished fold. Man in hotel room. Murdered man.
Listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. The light of a new November morning taps Broadway's shoulder, breaks the clinch that held it all night long. The beginning of it, the slow moments before going to work time, the gesture, splash water in your face and get ready for this round. Then from somewhere, the warning buzzer, the faraway shriek of a whistle. Get ready to fight it. Forget the bumps of yesterday. Put a clean white shirt over them and a pretty necktie. Get out there. A new day just came out of the corner. For me, the day began when the office lights shone on the plump head of Sergeant Gino Tartaglia.
Good morning, Danny.
Hi, Gino. Come on in. Oh, what have you got there?
I brought them in today in case you haven't done it yet. Pick and choose.
Hmm. They're very nice, Gino.
So, if you haven't bought your Christmas cards yet, I'm taking orders. My neighbor, Mrs. Renbaum, has a home hobby with a paintbrush and scissors. So I took a lot on consignment to bring to the office for all the boys to see.
I'll look at them later, Gino, if you don't mind.
Any special ideas you have, Mrs. Renbaum will be glad to make up, Danny. For instance, this one, ordered by Officer Wendelken. Read it, Danny.
Hmm? To my wife, the best to you this Christmas time, darling second cousin of mine. Gino.
Poems like that come to Mrs. Renbaum in flashes, Danny.
Don't work that, Gino, please.
Indeed. From fingerprints found on the deceased at the Ruxton Plaza Hotel, the deceased is an ex-con by the name of Frank Grunner.
What kind of record?
Cracked safes. Was out on a parole.
Hmm. For how long?
About a year. Assignment to probation officer Harry Blaine.
Harry, huh?
Well, you know what Gunner's been doing since he's been out. I can take a walk down.
Danny?
Just leave the Christmas cards on my desk, Gino.
And you'll give me an order?
Oh, I'm sure we'll be able to work out something.
Man tries, Danny, does the best he knows how. Reads the books on how to be a good probation officer. Attends the lectures in Bluey. Blows up, smacks him in the face.
You're sorry about Frank Grunner?
Yeah, if he was to put it that way, I'm sorry. Ought to be accustomed to it by now. Best years of my life I spent being sorry.
About Grunner, Harry?
Good boy, I think. On his way to being a good boy.
You want to tell me about it?
Year out of state prison, reported to me regular. Did the right thing, said the right things.
Go on.
You know what he said to me? He said, Harry, you don't bother me. I can't chum with the Denimore alumni. Who needs them? What bothers me, Harry, is I can't vote. A thing like that is very painful, said to me.
Harry.
Yes, Danny?
Grunner was murdered.
I'm sorry, Danny. Didn't mean to take up so much of your time.
Grunner moved out of a flea bag into a Park Avenue hotel.
Oh, Frank was a boy with taste for nice things. Are you going to hold that against him?
But just tell me how he did it.
Oh, he had a fine job. I arranged it for him. He's doing real fine. Good reports on him. I'm sure...
Where was his job, Harry?
Shoe salesman at Andrea's department store. Very high-class merchandise. High-class customers, too. Frank developed a knack with shoes in an occupational therapy class at state prison. He's doing real fine.
Thanks, Harry.
You're very welcome, Danny. Another thing Frank told me.
Yeah, what?
He said soon he was going into business for himself. I patted him on the back for that one. I even offered... I'm sorry I took so much of your time, Danny.
I beg your pardon.
Of course. But we're for ladies, you know. Only. Our...
Police.
Oh. Then Mrs. Cliff will have to wait, won't she? Off my perch. And here we are. Now.
I will talk about Frank Grunner.
Delighted. Mr. Van, take Mrs. Cliff 4AA blue sandals, gold trim. You know the one. Show her the one she returned last week first. She'll never know. Now, to Frank Grunner, shall we?
Let's
indeed. Talk about your 3AA. There was one for you.
There was?
As a salesman, I mean. Rough, but gentle. You know.
Good, go on.
How could he miss?
Well, just tell me about him.
It's something a great shoe salesman is born with. Frank Grunner had it. Many of us try...
That's not what I want to know. I want to know who
his
customers...
were.
Yes. We'll start from there.
His favorite one?
All right.
A toss-up.
Now, look...
Between Mrs. Barker and...
Mrs. who?
Mrs. Barker, Cora Barker.
And Frank Grunner always waited on her?
The long minutes they spent over there by the X-ray machine. She with her foot in it, he peering into the eyepiece. The giggles and the chuckles that went on there.
Real friendly, huh?
The amount of shoes he sold her was the talk of the city.
You know whether he ever saw her on the outside?
He was an ex-convict, you know.
Yeah, I know.
That's the only reason.
For what?
For meeting him after the store closed. For taking him home in her car. To make Frank feel that he was not unwanted. To make him know that she and we were all pulling for him. And we were.
Yeah, that's the reason why she picked him up.
Cora Barker is a married woman. Sir, our customers...
No, of course. Well, you've been a big help, thanks. That's about all I want to know.
Of course. Did Mr. Van fit you, Mrs. Clayton? I see he did.
Walk out of it. Past the knee-high mirrors, past the reflections of misted silk, shod and unshod. And have the vague impression that the large toe in one of them had been crooked, was beckoning you. And pull up for an instant, look back, and see the toe now peeking out of the latest thing in Peruvian lizard. Comfortable there. Then the door that opens photoelectrically onto late November Avenue. Walk it. And against a stone facade pose two names. Frank Grunner, Mrs. Cora Barker, and another, Johnny Clark. First-time thief who was dead of a bullet between his eyes, had become aware of another thing, the quickening pace of the crowd, the fleet curve of November into evening, and race it to headquarters. And in your office, find the lights already turned on against swift winter night. The man who'd done it, Detective Dennison.
You have a touch of color on your cheeks, Danny. Nippy out there, huh?
Yeah. You got anything, Dennison?
Yeah, I made a routine check on the possessions of the late Frank Grunner. Found a thing.
Oh, what?
Passbook. Savings account, Corn Exchange Bank. Frankie boy was a very thrifty character.
Salary, commissions, he had a good job.
Not this good, Danny. Very few people have it this good. Look, I'll show you. 17th, deposit of 300 simoleons.
Mm-hmm.
10th, just a week before that, deposit of 2 C's plus 50. 3rd, which is just a week before the 10th, 4, 6, 7, and 29 cents. Goes on like that. There's something else I got for you, Danny.
You're a ball of fire today, aren't you, Danny?
Today, yesterday, other days, there have been rumors. That Cora Barker, Danny.
Yeah, what about her?
I see how well Frank Grunner was doing. Struck me I should check how was Mrs. Cora Barker doing. You know what, chum?
Just tell me, huh?
Rich girl like Mrs. Barker. Not a savings account to her name. Nowhere in no bank. I figure the married lady's a spendthrift, Danny. You follow me? Mind I use your phone, Danny? Promise to babe, but give
just
a
turn out the lights and you leave, huh, Dennison? Me, Mrs. Barker?
Yes, of course. You're the policeman who was here when my husband Eddie killed that burglar in the library. Please come in.
Thanks. Well, I'd like to talk to you.
Well, don't you think Eddie should be here? He's just in his room with his gun.
Nice collection. I looked at them when I was here.
If he spends hours with them. My husband's hobby, guns. I'll call him.
Later.
Well, how do I entertain you, Mr. Clover?
Talk.
About what? What possibly could you and I have?
About a murdered man.
Oh, no, you're wrong. My husband explained it to me. That wasn't murder. That burglar was robbing our safe, and Eddie shot him. That's not murder. Murder
is... I'm talking about Frank Grunner.
Who?
A shoe salesman.
I don't...
At a lady's shoe shop named Andrea's.
Oh.
He was murdered. Didn't you read about it?
Yes, I did.
Want to call your husband now, Mrs. Barker?
I told you, he's cleaning his guns. He doesn't like to be disturbed.
Get him.
Very well.
Eddie,
that policeman
here, Dan.
Which one?
Colvin.
What does he want?
He wants to see you.
All right. He says you want to see me. What do you want to see me about?
Why did you bring the gun along, Mr. Barker? Well,
I was cleaning it. In a few minutes, I'm going to go on cleaning it.
Mm-hmm. Nice rifle.
I like her. Now, what do you want?
I want you in on a conversation I was having with your wife.
What were you talking about, Cora?
He said something about murder, and I explained to him what you explained to me about killing that burglar, and...
Yeah, then we went on to talk about Frank Grunner.
What have you got on your mind, Clover?
The usual things for a policeman on homicide. Who murdered him?
Eddie.
What?
He's found out I knew Frank Grunner, so he probably thinks I know something about...
Listen, Clover, what harm is it for my wife to know a shoe salesman? She told me about him. An ex-con who needed a smile. And is that why you're here, to ask my wife about the smile?
About the smile? About the lifts home? About Frank Grunner's bank book?
What about it?
How he was getting rich on a salesman's salary?
You're saying what, Mr.?
Get back to the boy you killed the other night. Just a kid who opened your safe real neat. A kid without a record. Just a wife and a dream and a need for some fast money. A kid. A shipping clerk at a wholesale house.
Well, don't get sloppy about it, Clover. Just say it.
Shipping clerk. Friend of Frank Grunner. Frank Grunner, friend of your wife. Frank Grunner, man with growing bank account because of your wife. Cora.
Listen, Eddie, we talked about it. You said you'd forget it.
I like going over it. I like watching what it does to you. Say it slow, Cora.
There's not much more.
Just slow.
Eddie.
Your wife ran out of money to give to Frank. She had no bank account of her own. So go out of town. Go to Palm Springs.
Her idea. She's a cutie, isn't she?
Give Frank the combination to the safe so he could rob it, get more money. Only Frank wouldn't take any chances. Not Frank, for the record. He gave the big opportunity to the boy.
Tough about that plane being grounded, wasn't it, Cora?
Please, Eddie.
And the way you begged me to take a train. Anything to stay away from our house.
What about Grunner?
Sure, I killed him, too. Him, my wife. Cora told me. I made her tell me. You don't think I'm stupid, do you? How did that boy know the combination of the safe? I didn't tell anyone. Cora must have.
What do you want me to do now, Cora? Kill him? Kill you? What?
You like guns so much. You like killing so much.
Let's have the gun, Barker.
Watch me, Cora.
Kill him.
He's scared, Clover.
Put it down. He's not scared, honey.
He doesn't believe you. He doesn't know you like I do.
Oh, what am I, honey?
After you killed that boy, after the police left, kill Eddie. Do it again.
A real cutie. You want a gun, Clover? Catch.
How do you feel, Cora?
You're crazy.
No more. Lock us up, Clover. Put us away.
An enchanted island, this Broadway, or a desert of dust. Look at it, and it's a magician's pitch with golden mirrors and fountains that plume with jewels. Look at it again, and it's dissolved, and the flakes trail away in the night wind. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat. Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Mary Jane Croft was heard as Cora and Edgar Berrier as Eddie Barker. Featured in the cast were James McCallion, Lillian Bayef, Norma Barton, Leo Cleary, and Byron Kane. Bill Anders speaking. Broadway is My Beat has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
You smell smoke, Johnny?
What'd you see? Who is that?
This is Henry Willoughby at Four State Mutual Insurance Company.
Oh, hi, Hank.
And I asked if you smell smoke.
Should I? What kind?
The kind $5,000 makes when it goes up in flames.
Where?
Over in Cranford, the Peerless Junkyard.
Junkyard?
That's right.
But if there's only a $5,000 loss, how can you afford me?
Because what I smell is arson.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Four State Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Peerless Fire matter. Expense account item one, a dollar even, cab to Hank Willoughby's office in the Security National Building, where he lost no time in getting to the point.
Policy was taken out by one Oscar H. Lehman about 4 years ago. He's the owner of the junkyard. Address of the yard is corner of Howard and Kingsway Boulevard.
And why do you suspect arson, Hank?
That fire didn't start until about 4 o'clock this morning. When I got here to the office a few minutes after nine, the claim was already on my desk.
Almost as though he'd had it filled out and waiting, even before the fire occurred, huh?
Precisely.
How much do you know about this man, Lehman?
Well, nothing really, outside of the data on the policy. His home address is 232 East 4th Street.
Also in Cranford.
Yeah.
Okay, Hank. I'll see what I can see. Item 2, 40 cents phone call to make sure the suspect, or at this point, I guess I better call him the client, to make sure he'd be around for questions.
Here speaks Oscar Lehman.
Mr. Lehman, this is Johnny Dollar representing your insurance company.
So why do you waste time at the telephone? Well, then maybe you're coming here with my check for $5,000 right away, huh?
Well, you see, there are a couple of things that...
So, all right, I'll be waiting for you when you come with the money. Goodbye.
Huh? Item 3, $120 for a train ticket to Cranford. Item 4, $2 for an old rattletrap taxi when I got there. Cranford is a new town, or rather a new one built on what was left of the old. When the big clock company folded up at the end of World War II, Cranford kind of fell to pieces. But situated as it was, just a few miles above the busy city of New Haven, a bunch of smart New York operators had stepped in and were busy making a nice modern residential community out of it. New stores, new homes, and all the fixings.
You see there in the block up there ahead?
Huh?
They had a big fire there this day, a big junkyard.
Yeah, I see.
Man, it was really hot. Thought it was going to take the three houses there on Howard Street along with it. You know, flying embers and the heat and all. But the wind swung around. It didn't even get touched.
Yeah, well, pull up, will you? I want to look it over.
Okay, mister, you're the boss. Hey, you want me to keep the meter running?
No, I'll leave you here.
Okay. That's 85 cents. But it would have been a buck and a half to where you first wanted to go.
Okay. Hey,
Hey, thanks. Boy, how I hate to see that junkyard gone.
Oh, why?
Oh, well, that's where I've been buying my parts to keep this old crate tied together.
You know something? It looks it.
Now that Peerless is gone, I'll probably either have to get a new cab or either try and fix this one up right, you know, and that costs dough.
Yeah, well, happy fixing.
Yeah, like I say, though, out of something bad always comes something good.
Sure.
And I not only mean my taxi, mister, but them houses there, too.
Well, what about them?
Oh, they're on Howard Street. They've been beefing their heads off ever since the yard got its license. So now, no more junkyard. Now the whole place could be residential like it ought to. Like I always say, out of something bad,
come
always
something good, yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I gotta get going.
Hey, you know something? Maybe that fire gives me a good idea. Like, maybe I should burn up this old wreck of mine and the insurance company would have to give me a new one. Hey, how about that?
Maybe you'd better be careful who you say that to.
Hmm? Oh, sure.
Especially not to an insurance investigator.
Yeah,
like
well,
me.
Don't you worry, bud. I'm too smart. You? You?
That's right. Oh, happy day. In spite of the valiant efforts of Fire Chief Dale Marley and his crew, the Peerless Junkyard was just that, junk. And he agreed with the cab driver. The other property owners were probably glad to see the eyesore go up in flames.
Well, you wouldn't like it either, Dollar, having a place like that in your front yard. And just take a look at those folks standing around. You see what I mean.
Yeah, I must admit they don't look very unhappy about it. So the fire started in the shed that stood right here, huh?
That's right, yeah. The big shed that Peerless used to store a lot of old furniture and stuff like that. Hey, Peters,
huh?
Hit that corner over there with some more foam.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, a fellow runs a grocery store on the catty corner. He sleeps upstairs over it. Said it woke him up. Went off with a boom, like a small explosion.
Have you considered the possibility of arson, Chief?
Yeah, I have. That's why I called New Haven, asking to send up a couple of men from their special squad.
But you found no trace?
Nothing I could put my finger on. You got any ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe I have. I learned a long time ago that a lumber yard or a furniture factory were about the worst places in the world to look for signs of arson. The wood goes up so hot and so fast. And the remains of this shed wouldn't be much better. So I walked over to the little grocery store and spent item 5, 21 cents, for a loaf of white bread. Then I rejoined Chief Marley at the ruins of the shed.
The arson experts can come up from it.
Hey, what's the matter, Dollar? Did you get to eat breakfast?
Oh, something like that. Hey, you want a chunk?
Not without strawberry jam and a cup of coffee. Hey, Herb, take it easy over there.
Hey!
Stomping around like that, you wipe out all the clues. Now, like I told you, Dollar, the fire started somewhere right around here.
Uh-huh.
And the quick shift in the wind moved it over that way.
Uh-huh. Chief.
Yeah. Here, chew a piece of this fresh bread.
What?
That's right, chew it. Get the taste of it in your mouth.
What for?
Just do it, will you please? Here.
Well, you got an idea, then?
You bet I have. Here.
You mean chewing on a hunk of bread is going... Is going to what?
Now swallow it.
What is this, a gag?
Something? No, not by a long shot. Now watch.
Well, don't throw it away. Now you got my appetite up, I'll have some more.
Here now, chew on this piece.
What? After you dropped it in the ashes?
That's right. Chew on it.
Oh, now,
go ahead. Do it. I'm serious.
Holy kerosene.
That's right.
Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah. Fresh bread will pick up even the slightest trace.
Even after the fire?
Even after a fire. That means kerosene was brought in and poured over the floor of this furniture shed to set it off.
And, Dollar, I'm going to get in the police and have them lock up old Oscar Lehman so
fast. No, wait.
What for?
Until I can talk to Lehman.
Well, now, look.
You look. This isn't any absolute proof of arson.
Well, it's good enough for me. It's good enough for a suspicion charge. I'll tell the police what I found out.
Who found out?
Well,
what I found out. Now, don't forget that. But if it puts us on the trail of an arsonist, if you like, you can take the credit for it. Only if you'll cooperate.
Yeah, but Dollar...
Otherwise, you'll lose any cooperation from me. Okay?
Okay.
Item 680 cents cab to the address on East 4th Street where Oscar Lehman lived. Like the Howard Street address, this was a has-been section. Lehman's home reminded me of some of those on the other side of the town, next to the junkyard. When the old character let me in, I wasted no time in getting to the point.
You ask why I should be staying here in my home instead of at the yard? And I'm asking you, why not? What good can I do over there? My lovely junkyard is gone. There's nothing I can do. So I'm waiting here to collect the money your company owes me. So are you going to pay me or not?
Well, now that depends. As I started to say...
I tell you, I didn't even know about the fire till I went down there to open up the gate and start the day.
What time did you go down there, Mr. Lehman?
7 o'clock, like always.
Well, you sure didn't waste any time getting your claim into the office in Hartford, did you?
Of course not. So soon as I see what happened, I sign up the claim and take it to Hartford. And the office is closed, so I leave it under the door.
Yeah, well...
What else could I do? Sit around and wait to think about it while the money's coming to me? It's my money, so I should have it. You know how much merchandise I have in that yard? $25,000. Retail?
Yeah. Then why'd you burn it up?
You think I'm crazy I should do such a thing? Don't you understand now I'm out of business for God?
Well, what do you mean?
My license for the yard on condition, you know.
A conditional license?
Yeah, that's right. If I'm not in business every day, I lose the license. I lose the lease on the land. Then they make houses, little stores. It's a big development company. So you're crazy to come and talk to me, tell me I should set fire.
Maybe I've suddenly changed my mind, Mr. Lehman. Maybe I've already met the arsonist.
Huh?
And I was just too blind to see him.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Our flag now numbers 50 stars. And behind each star, there stands yet another flag representing one of the 50 states. Missouri's state flag is a horizontal tricolor of red, white, and blue. In the center is a circular device bearing the state coat of arms. An eagle, symbolizing the superior authority of the nation. A grizzly bear representing Missouri, chosen for his size, strength, and valor. And a crescent moon, symbolic of the shield carried by the second sun. Missouri being the second state carved out of the Louisiana Territory. A belt encircles the coat of arms with a motto inscribed, United we stand, divided we fall. Atop the flag is a cluster of stars representing the Union, with a larger star for Missouri as she surmounts her difficulties and assumes her rank among the states. The state motto is also inscribed on the flag. Salus populi suprema lex esto. The welfare of the people shall be the supreme law. Surrounding the device is a group of 24 stars. Missouri's state flag,
the flag of the 24th state to enter the Union, was adopted on March 22nd, 1913.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Peerless Fire Matter.
Something the cab driver had said while taking me to the scene of the junkyard fire had suddenly come back to me. He'd been talking about the nearby property owners, homeowners.
They've been beefing their head off ever since the yard got its license. So now, no more junkyard. Now the whole place can be residential like it oughta. Yeah, like I always say, out of something bad always comes something good.
Item 7.85, another taxi back to the scene of the fire. The men from the department were still busy cleaning up. Their chief, Dale Marley, had been busy with some detective work. Had some answers that seemed to make good sense.
Okay, Dolly, you see this hardware? See this groove in the foundation wall?
Yeah. Big sliding door, huh?
That's right. And here, the lock was still in the hasp.
Yeah, I see.
It's hardly likely somebody would try to pull a big sliding door closed and lock it after starting a fire with kerosene. It's too dangerous.
Unless he used a wick of some kind.
Yeah, but look here. On the side that faced Howard Street.
Street? I'd just call this an alley.
Yeah, pretty narrow from the old days. Now, look here.
Well, it's window glass.
Right. Yeah, there was a window here. You see, here's the two parts of the catch from it. The catch was open.
Yeah, but the question is, was it open from the inside or outside?
And I think I've got the answer. Look across the street.
So?
Those homes and the little lawns and gardens in front of them.
So what?
Well, you see the rocks they all used to border their flower beds?
Go on, Chief.
Now, look here. Just inside the shed where the window was, I found this rock under the ashes. And, Dollar, it looks to me like somebody threw that rock through the glass, opened the catch, climbed in, spread the kerosene, climbed out, tossed in a light of some kind, and left in a hurry.
Yeah, but who?
That's just it. You got a better idea than old man Lehman? You talk to him.
Yeah, I think I have.
Like who?
I'll let you know when I find out the name.
Well, now, wait a minute, Dollar.
I hoped that last crack would keep Chief Marley from sending the police after Oscar Lehman. Maybe he was guilty of firing his own junkyard. But with only 5,000 insurance, it didn't make sense. And I had a couple of better ideas. At least about people who might have had reason to do it. Three, as a matter of fact. Four, there were three residences on Howard Street facing what remained of the junkyard. Thanks to the sudden shift of wind, they'd received little damage. I walked down the short length of Howard Street to the first old house. The name Howard McNeil was on the little metal mailbox.
Yes, well, what is it?
Mr. McNeil, I'm Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator, looking into this junkyard fire.
This is a fine time to come around selling insurance after the fire's out. You should know better, young fellow.
No, you misunderstood me.
Why, do you know what would have happened if that wind hadn't changed? It would have set this whole block on fire. That's what it would have done. It would have burned us all out. We'd have been helpless.
Yes, Mr. McNeil.
Especially that poor widow lady, Miss Cummings, down there in the third house, right across from the shed where the whole thing started.
Mr. McNeil.
Yes?
I'm not here to sell insurance. I'm investigating the fire, understand?
Well, don't.
What's that?
You can stop right now. Just leave things as they be. Don't you know that fire was a blessing?
I'm not quite sure.
I said blessing. That fire was the finest thing that's happened around here in years.
Oh, you like its having happened, huh?
You just bet I do. The only way we could ever get rid of that awful pile of junk right in our front yards. Now, maybe they'll give us back our nice little park that used to set there.
Or build a lot of track houses.
Yeah, now... all right. What did they do? Anything is better than that wretched junkyard. I've hated it. Everybody's hated it. I hated it.
Enough to set it on fire?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Oh, no. Was it me?
Well?
Mr. Dollar... A quiet, peace-loving person like me? Oh, no, why, I wouldn't even think of such a thing. Especially since that fire might have got out of control and burned me out.
Well, you carry insurance, of course.
I do not. I don't believe in it. No, so don't you try to tell me anything.
I told you, I'm an investigator.
Well, why don't you ask that Nazi if he had insurance?
Nazi?
Yes, that Oscar Lehman that owned that dirty junkyard.
Why do you call him that?
Well, he's a German, isn't he?
Well, it doesn't make him a Nazi.
Well, it does to me. Anybody who'd wangle a license to put up a filthy place like that on our beautiful street, especially if he's a German, well, to me, he's a Nazi of the worst kind, the worst kind, the very worst kind. Think she's a ladies' man, too.
All right, now, have you any idea who, besides you, would have liked to see that place burned up?
I certainly have.
Oh.
Why don't you ask the police? They were here at dawn asking us all questions.
You said asking us all.
Of course, I mentioned the widow Cummings that lived in the third house, and then there's Miss Gertrude Mary Anastasia Conroy, the nice spinster lady who lives next door, and it's a very charming lady, Miss Conroy.
Yeah, well, now would you mind?
Oh, and what spirit she has. Now, that's the way I like them, Mr. Dollar, ladies with spirit. And do you know something? One of these days, I'm going to ask her for a date in spite of the competition.
You never have?
Oh, no, sir, no. I'm not the bold type like some people I know, but I've been working up to it.
And how long have you been a neighbor?
16 years, and you mark my word, one of these days I'm going to march right up on her front porch, and Miss Conroy, I'm going to say...
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Mr.
Yes, but I was going to tell you, but... Oh, dear, I must have said something wrong. Whew.
And what the devil is it you'd be wanting?
Miss Conroy?
That's right. And don't you see the sign beside the door? No peddlers, no solicitations. So be gone with you. I'm busy cleaning the smoke out of your house for that awful fire this morning.
Well, that's what I'm calling about, ma'am, that fire. I'm an insurance investigator.
Investigator, huh?
Well, now, just a...
If you're an investigator, young man, let me see your badge.
Thanks.
That's right. If you're an investigator, you're a detective. And if you're one of them, you're with the police.
No.
And if you are, you can go right back and tell your chief I've had me feel right up to here with answering fool questions about that fire. As if I myself did it, huh?
Well, did you?
For years now, I've connived and connipped it how to get that terrible, dirty, filthy junkyard out of this neighborhood. And now, poor soul, he's lost it. Oh, I could cry my eyes out.
You what?
Oh, such a lovely old man he is when I finally met him, that dear Mr. Lehman.
Oh?
Oh, the horrible things that Hitler done to him before he escaped them Nazis that took over his fine old country. And when he got here, he put all his savings in that lovely second-hand lot.
Lovely.
So as he could earn an honest living.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Such a fine man. Such a gentleman. The way he'd click his heels and bow when he come and call in on Sunday afternoon. Oh, such a gentleman.
Wait a minute, Miss Conroy. I don't get it. A couple of minutes ago, you sounded as though you hated that junkyard.
Second-hand lot.
Oh.
And so I did. Until I got to know that nice Mr. Lehman. And I'll tell you this. In spite and despite of the fact they won't ever let him set up in the same kind of business again, if it takes every cent I own, I'll see that he gets started in something else.
Well, I'll be...
Investigator, huh?
Insurance investigator.
And then I suppose I can tell you confidential that I've set me cap for dear Oscar.
You mean you hope to marry him?
Aye, and that I will before I'm through.
But I got the impression that your neighbor, Mr. McNeil...
Oh, that crazy old stick in the mud, that old coot, huh? But if you're from the insurance company, how can I help you, lad, with your investigation thing?
Well, you can't tell me this. Was your friend Mr. Lehman in need of money, particularly?
Well, no. His business has been good. He drives a nice car and keeps a nice home. But like I said, if he needs more than he's got to get started again, I'll be the first to help him. Besides, it will sort of help to bring us closer together if I'm worrying about him a bit. No, won't it?
Yes, I guess it will. I just want to make sure.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah?
It's so blind I was thinking of me darling Oscar. So that's what you were up to with your nasty questions.
What?
Implicating that he might have burned up his place by his own self to get the insurance money. Is that what your evil, filthy mind was thinking of?
I didn't say that.
But that's what you meant now, ain't it?
No. After all, somebody set that fire. And if he was in need of money...
And just because I told the poor soul to get his claim in real quick this morning...
You told him?
Of course I did. Give him something to do besides standing around in the ruins, crying his poor old eyes out, keeping his sorrows to himself.
Mm.
But I'll soon put a stop to that. I'll cook him up a real nice mess of corned beef and cabbage, German style, that is, and take it over for his supper to comfort and keep him company. And what will you be doing for the poor soul?
Well, that depends.
Oh, it depends, does it? Well, you and that insurance company better pay up what you owe him instead of making snide talk about maybe he himself set that fire in his... Oh, get out. Go on, get out. Why should I be wasting my time talking to the likes of you when I've got cooking to do for me?
Oh, brother.
This was turning out to be the most offbeat insurance matter I ever handled. Well, there was only one suspect left. The woman living in the third house opposite the shed where the fire had started. The Widder Cummings, McNeil had called her. I went up on the porch, rang the doorbell. And again. After the third time, I was about to decide no one was home when the door slowly opened. And just inside the door, in a wheelchair, sat a little old lady, pale, gray-haired. Her face reflected years of pain, of worry.
I've been waiting for you to come, Mr. Dollar.
So you know who I am.
I overheard you at my window when you talked to Mr. McNeil and Miss Conroy. Listening to the neighborhood is the only thing I have left these days, tied down as I am to this wheelchair.
Yes, I see. I'm sorry.
Come in and sit down, please.
Thanks. There's, no one to take care of you here?
Only Rudolph, who does as little as he dares. And you must take him away, Mr. Dollar.
Rudolph?
My stepson, who keeps me here, waits for me to die.
What?
Not even a rest home, where I'd have care and friends, but here to die. He'd help me die, too, if he dared, because of the money.
What money, Mrs. Cummings?
That my husband left me. A lot, Mr. Dollar.
And this Rudolph wants to get his hands on it?
That's all he wants. That's why he wants me dead. But he hasn't dared kill me, because everybody knows that we're alone here together. And if I should die from his neglect, they'd know he did it. But he's smart. That's why he thought of the fire.
He what?
He thought that it would burn down this house, too, and trap me here.
Mrs. Cummings, do you know what you're saying?
The divine providence. The changing wind kept the fire away.
He set that fire to burn this house and you?
He's clever. He made it known that he'd be away all night, that he wouldn't be back here until he finished his work at the plant in New Haven. But he came back, Mr. Dollar. This morning, before dawn, I heard him here in this house. And from this window, I could see him in the moonlight.
Mrs. Cummings.
No, I must tell you, quickly, because he'll be coming back from work. His work, to keep up appearances, to keep them from suspecting. His gambling. The terrible people he goes out with at night. Gangsters, that's all. And I must tell you, because if I don't, listen to me.
I'm listening.
I saw him take a can, the kerosene we keep in the cellar for when the electricity goes out. He took it across the street. He broke the window of the shed and went in. Then he came out. He threw a piece of burning waste back in. Then ran.
Mrs. Cummings, are you sure?
I lied to the police. I couldn't make myself tell them. After all these years of knowing what he's been and saying nothing. Well, I thought I'd wait for him. Maybe when he saw his evil plan had failed, that I was still here. Maybe I could make him give himself up. But in my heart, I knew he wouldn't. Because he's bad. All bad.
Mrs. Cummings, I'm glad you told me.
God forgive me. But I knew that if I didn't, he'd find some other way to... You must take him away, Mr. Dollar. Before he does murder.
Expense account item 8, $10, board and room. I've stayed an extra day in Cranford to clear things up. But while I waited for Rudolph to return, I found the kerosene can he'd used down in the cellar. Chief Marley found the top from it in the ashes. The police have since found only his prints on it. Rudolph is in the city jail. And I'm sure Mrs. Cummings will testify against him. After all, her life is at stake. Hoskin Lehman, his claim will be paid in full. Well, I hope he and Miss Conroy live happily ever after. Expense account total, including incidentals on the way back to Hartford, $14.46. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, exploration in the high Sierra country of California. And at the end of the trail lies death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
This is Dan Cumberly speaking.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of Case Closed. If you want to find more from Broadway Is My Beat, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, past episodes of this show or all the others, just visit relicradio.com. You'll find all that, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button. This podcast, alongside all the others, is all listener-supported. If you'd like to help out, make sure they all continue. Give that button a click. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, so any amount is always appreciated. Thanks very much to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.